Hi there, this is Darren Spoo, pastor at First Baptist Church in Tulsa, and welcome to our weekly podcast. For more information about First Baptist Tulsa, check us out on the web, tulsafbc.org. First Baptist Tulsa has a simple mission, to glorify God in all we do. We want to make God look good because He is good. May God bless you with His goodness this week. So I love odd stories, I love odd facts, I love odd books. And the book I hold in my hand is possibly the strangest book I've ever read. And if you know my taste in books, this is saying a whole lot. This is a strange book. It's called Rest in Pieces. And it's a story of famous and infamous people and the curious things that happened to their corpses after they were dead. Now, how many of you would not read this book is what I'm thinking. I love this kind of book, okay? And just a couple of examples, Albert Einstein. Einstein revolutionized the way that we imagine physics, and after he died, he had a simple request that he would be cremated, that his ashes would be spread in an undisclosed location. Most of that was done except for Einstein's brain. The autopsy physician removed the brain to study it because here was a man who was a genius. You want to keep his brain and look at it, right? So his brain, Einstein's brain, has now made several laps around the planet. It is possibly the most famous brain in history. And then there's Ted Williams. Ted Williams, Hall of Fame baseball player, probably the greatest hitter the game has ever seen. When he died, he had made an agreement with Alcor Life Extension Foundation, meaning at the moment he died, he was deep frozen in nitrogen, negative 230 degrees, in hopes, I call him the Han Solo of the Hall of Fame, frozen out there. You've seen Star Wars, right? You know what I'm talking about. In hopes that one day when all the world's ills are cured, that they'll bring Ted Williams back to life. He'll be resuscitated. And then there's a man you've never heard of before, Emanuel Swedenborg. When our country was being born, he had just died. And his friends were absolutely convinced that he had invented the elixir of life. And he wasn't really dead at all, but he had staged his own death and his grave was empty. One night after having a few too many, his friends went and cracked open his grave, and not only was Emanuel Swedenborg dead, he was really, really dead. And then there's Jesus of Nazareth. For 33 years, he walked in our world, and he taught and thought about God in revolutionary ways. But he made enemies of the wrong people, of the Roman government that didn't like competition for anyone's loyalty. And the Romans were experts at executions. Once they put you to death, you were dead. There was no hope of resuscitation whatsoever. And on that third day, after Jesus was buried, the women go to the tomb to complete the Jewish burial ritual. And they have every reason to believe that he will still be there. But when they crack open the tomb, he is not. And there begins to be rumors of resurrection. First, just a small group of women in the garden. And then most of Jesus' disciples, they see him on this first Easter 2,000 years ago. But there was one disciple that was missing. He was a man by the name of Thomas. Now, as we've been walking up to Easter this year, we've been looking at the separate wounds of Christ, the scars on the hand and the feet and the side and the crown of thorns. We saw the way that those scars played into Jesus' crucifixion, but now those scars will continue to tell his story through the resurrection, especially with this disciple named Thomas. And here is the account. Now, Thomas, also known as Didymus, he was one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came on that first day of the week. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Now let's pause here for just a minute. Thomas is called Didymus. What does that mean? Well, Thomas was a twin. You can hear in that word the word ditto. He had a twin, maybe in the core of the disciples, but most likely it was somebody outside of the core of disciples. I dated a twin once in high school, and it was the most uncomfortable dating situation I've ever been in. Jenny and Jerry were identical twins, And I felt like I wasn't competing with the opinions of one woman. I felt like I was competing for the opinions and affections of two women. Two women. Does anybody feel me in here today? I always felt like, and finally, it just all broke apart. I couldn't do it. So here the disciples are competing with the skepticism of this twin of Thomas. They're all excited. Thomas, we've seen the Lord. He appeared on the first day of the week. Guys, something's wrong with you. I mean, how many of you would be like Thomas and you would be a little bit skeptical? Thomas might have thought that they were just mistaken. Listen, appearances do funny things in our minds. Maybe you saw somebody who looked like Jesus. You know Charlie Chaplin, the silent film comedian? He once lost a Charlie Chaplin look-alike contest. He came in third. Sometimes we mistakenly look at the appearances of people. Or maybe Thomas thought, you're mad with grief and some kind of group delusion. You didn't really see the Lord. And I tell you what, if you want me to believe, I'm going to have to not only see for myself, but experience for myself, to put my finger into his hands, to put my hand into his side. Thomas says some weighty words. By the way, your tongue is an amazing muscle. If need be, your tongue can lift a weight equal to 50 pounds. Thomas says some heavy, heavy words. I'm not going to believe unless I see it for myself. So some experts on the Gospel of John, people who study and the really academic folks, really brilliant people, they say that this account in the Gospel of John is the high point of the book. It's the climax. It's the apex. If so, then that means the Gospel of John is written to people who really want to have faith, but who might struggle with doubt. Think about that. If this is the high point of the Gospel of John, then John is written to people who really want to have faith, but who sometimes wrestle with doubt. And if that's who you really are, you know what? You're in pretty good company here today. So here's what I want to do just for a few minutes today. Let's look at what Jesus did to Thomas. That's how Jesus handled Thomas. And then let's look at how Thomas handled his doubts. Okay? So here we go. Here's the third paragraph. A week later, by the way, I think it's curious that Jesus waited an entire week. Evidently, he's not going to rush in and try to fix you. He's going to be patient with you. A week later, the disciples were in the house again, and Thomas this time was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them. I imagine this being completely silent, and all the disciples moved aside until Thomas was standing right there in the middle of the room. Spotlight came down. I could see Jesus going, I've been looking for you, Thomas. Jesus came and stood among them. Peace be with you, he said to Thomas. Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand, put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. Let's look at how Jesus handled Thomas here. The first thing he did was he spoke peace. I love that word, peace. As Jesus spoke peace over Thomas, I believe Jesus is speaking peace over you today. Many of us are nostalgic for our childhood. If you had a good childhood, you kind of look back and you really do see them as the wonder years, right? Because all of your problems were somebody else's problems. All of your worries were somebody else's worries. All your troubles was somebody else's. And life generally had a sense of peace. In fact, when I was a little kid, we had this house with a sidewalk all the way around the perimeter. And I had my big wheel tricycle. I went miles around that house, and my mom would often give me a bag of chips. I'd put them in a little pouch on my tricycle, and I'd go around the house. All I'd do all day, just munch chips and ride around the house. And to this day, when I taste that particular brand and flavor of potato chips, it literally is a taste of simpler times. But then we grow up, and life gets complicated and complex. Somebody has said that our life today is defined by the five D's: daycare, depression, debt, divorce, death. And I would add to that, doubt. We doubt everything. I believe it's significant here to see where Thomas got his peace. He got his peace through a personal encounter with Jesus Christ. So I talk to people about their faith all the time, and people generally come in, we close the door, and they express to me their doubts, their problems, such as, how can a good God send people to hell? Or what about people on the other side of the planet who never hear? Or I prayed for a certain thing and I didn't get it. Now, I believe that we will never still our doubts by pretending they don't exist, but we'll never still our doubts by just looking at the problems. We accomplish peace when we start dealing with a person. He is the source of peace. Guess what? This may surprise you. I don't have all the answers. I don't have all these things of faith still figured out. I still have some problems, but I choose to trust a person, Jesus Christ, and say, Jesus, I don't know some of these answers, but I trust you. And in that is a powerful sense of peace. And he says, peace, Thomas, here I am. Go ahead. Touch my hand. Touch my side. I find this interesting because Jesus wasn't physically in the room when Thomas stated these heavy words, this brash profession of doubt. But yet Jesus heard. It reminds me of my first apartment in Fort Worth. I was in graduate school. My wife and I got our first apartment there. It was a crummy apartment. Have you ever lived in that crummy place? Literally bug infested, and the walls were so thin we could hear our neighbors argue every night. Husband and wife, and they did argue every night. We didn't need to argue because our neighbors were arguing for us. We could hear every word. Could it be that the wall between heaven and earth is really, really thin? And Jesus already knows every doubt you have, every doubt you have about Him, about yourself, about your future. And He's waiting for you to quit just talking about your doubts and to talk to Him about your doubts. And then He says this, Thomas, stop doubting and believe. Literally, that line reads like this, stop becoming an unbeliever and become a believer. What I love about that is faith and doubt are choices that we make. Oftentimes we feel like a victim to our doubts. Well, I can't believe. I'm a doubtful person. I'm a skeptical person. No. Jesus here presents faith and doubt as a choice that you can make. Over Christmas, I was doing a little family genealogy, and I was looking at the 1930 census record of my great-grandfather in Emmett County, Iowa. His name was Chris Spoo. For some reason, I was fascinated by one question on that census. Do you own a radio set? And he'd put no. Just that one little space gave me an insight to what his life might have been like. So I want to ask you today, imagine this little blank that you have to fill in. Are you becoming a believer or are you becoming an unbeliever? And what you put in that space is significant. It will say a lot about who you choose to be and where you are going. So, this is what Jesus did to Thomas. This is how Jesus handled Thomas. He spoke peace. He said, Thomas, you need to touch. Go ahead. And then he challenged him. Stop becoming an unbeliever. Become a believer. Now, the reason scholars believe that this is the high point of the book of John is because of what Thomas does next. Thomas made a confession, the first full confession after the resurrection, my Lord and my God. Thomas said, there's no mistaken identity here. You are the Christ. And for you to survive death, you can only be one person. You can only be God in the flesh. So a couple of reflections here as I look at this story as a whole. Couple of thoughts. Jesus was more forgiving of Thomas than what Thomas deserved. Aren't you thankful for that? Because we live in a world where if you make a mistake, somebody's going to rub your nose in it, right? I told a story a few weeks ago and several people gasped, so that made me want to tell it again. I have this squirrely dog in the backyard. He likes to break into my jalapeno peppers and eat some of those peppers, or just really just kind of chew up the outside. So one day I took one of those peppers, broke it in half, took his tongue and rubbed it on his tongue. He has never bothered those peppers again. We live in a world where somebody will rub your nose and your mistakes or your failures. But Jesus, get this, and I love this phrase, I wish I had coined it. He practices forgiveness aggressively. Jesus, with Thomas and with you, practices aggressive forgiveness. That whatever disasters you have made of your life, whatever doubts, whatever do's and don'ts you did or didn't, he practices forgiveness. I also reflect on this, and I think, you know what? Maybe Thomas wasn't the skeptic he fancied himself to be. He made all these brash comments. I've got a touch for myself. Finger in hand, hand inside. Well, when Jesus makes the offer, we're not told, but I believe that Thomas didn't touch Jesus. Again, that personal encounter changed everything. Can I do a little sidebar here? This is my twisted sense of humor. I like to think that Jesus was standing there. Go ahead, Thomas, go ahead and touch. So Thomas real slowly takes his finger, puts it on Jesus' hand. As soon as he does, Jesus jumps back and goes, ow, 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 ow. Just kidding. Thomas, that's what you get for doubting me. Evidently, I found that a whole lot more funny than you did. I just see things maybe a little bit irreverently. But Thomas maybe was not the skeptic he fancied himself to be. Maybe you're not the doubter you have fancied yourself to be. That all of those doubts tend to dissolve when you have that personal encounter with Jesus Christ. I can only tell you what happened with me. When I was way back in my school days, I had a friend who disappointed me more than any friend possibly could. And I started thinking, if I can't trust Rob, who can I trust? And I began to search out things of faith. And I can tell you exactly where I was. I can tell you the Bible I had. I can tell you where I was reading. And as I began to read for myself, I began to sense a presence on the other side of the page. It was not just a page. It was the presence of God that began to work in my life. The personal encounter that's available between us and Him. Here's one last thought. Again, Jesus practiced aggressive forgiveness. Thomas was not quite the skeptic he fancied himself to be. And Jesus called Thomas, and I believe he calls us, to move beyond our shallow skepticism to a deep relationship with Him. I want you to think about this. Some of your doubts and some of your problems with your faith may not be your doubts and problems at all. It could be what you've heard from other people. But to move beyond that shallow skepticism to the depth of a relationship with Christ, the depth as deep as those wounds that reveal His love for you. So, a few weeks ago, I was giving an interview with a young lady for a local publication, and we were chatting, and in the course of conversation, she said, you know what, I actually attended First Baptist Church as a young girl. She's in her mid-20s right now, and she said, I was probably 9 or 10 years old, so a dozen years or so ago. And I asked her, what do you remember about that? She said, oh, I remember the sermon you preached. I said, I love it when people say that. She said, actually, I just remember a story that you told about breaking the 4-minute mile and breaking a psychological barrier. And I said, I know exactly the story you're talking about. I've told it many times. Roger Bannister back in the 50s, he was trying to break the 4-minute mile. Some people were saying it was not humanly possible. But then came that day in May when Roger Bannister ran 1 mile in 3:59.2. But he did more than break the 4-minute mile. He broke a psychological barrier. For all of history, men have been trying to do this and couldn't. But as soon as Bannister did, person after person after person started to break the 4-minute mile. He broke down not only the barrier of time, but the mental barrier. It can be done. I love talking to her about that because a dozen years later, she still remembered that story. I believe that's why Jesus told stories. They stick right here in our mind. And can you imagine for Thomas the way that this event stuck in his mind and his heart. He never forgot about it. In fact, for the rest of his life, he would remember this encounter with Jesus. And some believe that he went as far away as India to share the gospel. And I believe that everywhere he went, he told this story of a personal encounter. And it was about seeing the resurrected Christ, but it was also about Jesus breaking down the barrier of his doubt. Would you consider this morning that you have the opportunity to have a personal encounter with Jesus Christ? You and him. He is not a memory, he is a living presence. If you've never picked up one of the Gospels to read, read for yourself. See his presence beyond just the page and begin to have your own personal experience with the Lordship of Christ. Stop doubting and believe. And perhaps you will come to that day when you will say that confession as well. My Lord and my God.